For decades, writers from around the country have come to New York's Greenwich Village to live in a community of artists. Anne Waldman didn't have to travel far. She grew up in Greenwich Village. And in the 1960s, she became a key figure in New York's poetry scene. From 1968 to 77, she ran the influential St. Mark's Poetry Project, a series of readings at a church in Manhattan's Lower East Side. Writer Aram Saroyan once wrote, "Of all the poets of my generation, none has done more than Anne Waldman to bring poetry before the public at large." In 1975, Waldman and Allen Ginsberg co-founded the writing program at the Naropa Institute for Buddhist Studies in Colorado, which she still directs. She's also developed a following for her own performance poetry. She told me how she got started writing poems.
I think it came out of, you know, reading of poetry, which my mother was much more of a poetry reader. My father was more of a prose reader. And reading aloud. And I've found some things in old notebooks and journals from, you know, the age of 9 and 10 and 11. I remember when I started sending poems out to the Evergreen Review and the Village Voice when I was in high school, or probably even earlier than that. And it seemed very organic, somehow, the idea of it. And I had a typewriter at quite an early age, an old Olivetti. So I sort of enjoyed the way one would work on the page, the spacing and, you know, playing with that kind of thing.
Growing up in Greenwich Village, you probably saw a lot of poets around you when you were young. Did you have an idealized image of what the poet's life would be?
I don't know about idealized. It certainly there's some romantic quality there, and I remember seeing Gregory Corso, who seemed typical of the poet maudit, you know, the kind of damned or lost poet. I heard Robert Lowell read at an early age at NYU. There was something about the quality of bearing, you know, bearing your soul in a way, but in a formalized situation, you know, working with form, actually taking the chaos and making it somehow ordered and more refined, so that it wasn't simply getting up and being indulgent about your emotional state of mind.
You've said that your poetry has been as influenced by the radio and the telephone as by other poets, and I'd like you to explain that.
Well, I think as a child there was some, you know, that wonderful experience of being in bed at night and playing with a radio, flipping the dial around, and having that, you know, all those different voices and music come in. And a lot of the work I'm doing comes out of a sort of collage technique, you know, where you're putting different kinds of phrasings together and different voices. Often it's something I might overhear, you know, on the street, or I was talking about in some of the more musical work, this phrase comes into my head, such as skin, meat, bones. And then I, you know, explore that as a kind of, you know, voice, and where it crops up in different ways, and almost a free association. I think that, you know, that quality of range and vocabulary and music that you get from the radio, as well as, you know, the speaking voice. And Frank O'Hara once said something about the, you know, poem being as direct as a phone call, you know, that the communication can be that direct, and that immediate and energetic.
Would you read us just a few lines of Skin, Meat, Bones?
Certainly. And this actually, I woke up out of a dream, and I'd heard these notes. I actually woke to the notes, hearing the word skin, high range, meat, and bones. And I thought, this is it. I've discovered the, you know, meaning of life. It's all just skin, meat, and bones. And, you know, it seemed like the perfect haiku. And then, of course, later I realized it didn't quite do it all. So the poem became a kind of, you know, meditation using those notes as a refrain. And there's a lot of play and wordplay, especially with the bones. So I'll read a little section here. I've come to tell you of the things dear to me and what I've discovered of the skin, meat, bones. Your body waking up so sweet to me, skin. Dawn light its green skin. I'm in hungry repose. Meat, it's getting close to motion. Oh, skeleton bone. You might stretch it now. Skin,
So warm flesh, and lasting a while bone. Clock like a bone creaking, memory like a bone creaking. Little laughter lines around the eyes, skin, and how the mouth's redder than the rest, meat or nipples off purple rib cage of bones. It's morning anywhere, oh, sitting and lying around in my weary tinsel skin. Gotta get up and walk around in my cumbersome skin. Put on lightweight cotton skin, and shuffling skin slippers. The light's going to make it raw skin, or vulnerable meat, or hard bones.
What were you listening to? that had the skin, meat, bones thing in it.
I don't know.
Because you said you woke up hearing it, and I wasn't sure if you heard it in your mind or if you heard it on TV.
Yes, that's what I was saying. I heard it in my mind.
Does this happen to you a lot, that you wake up with words going through your mind?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes it's a more formal kind of narrative, a thing that comes out of a dream.
How did you start writing this more performance-oriented poetry?
I think at one point the poems were getting longer, and it was either Kenneth Koch or Allen Ginsberg. Actually, both of them were very encouraging after a particular reading. And I remember Kenneth saying, I like your vibrato, you know, extended and have the attitude of an opera singer. And of course, Allen, who writes long, often song-like, Whitman-esque pieces, was, you know, encouraging as well.
You really need a performer's confidence to pull it off. A lot of poets read their poems in quiet voices and really don't think of themselves as performers. Mm-hmm. But when you're reading in the way you are, it's really more of a theatrical type of thing. Did you have the courage at the beginning when you started doing it?
Well, I think in the very beginning I was extraordinarily nervous, and the traditional way to read seemed to be, you know, seated. And I remember looking into my page, you know, with my head somewhat bowed, and the voice was really, I could feel it on some level, very much in there and having a real power. And yet, because of the perhaps lack of confidence or, you know, some kind of fear and that, you know, why should I be putting my words out here in this way? You know, I was holding back. And I always felt there was a bigger voice inside in the beginning that I just needed to expand more. And then when I began, you know, standing up, it made a tremendous difference.
You and Allen Ginsberg co-founded a poetry and writing program at the Naropa Institute for Buddhist Studies in Colorado. And I was wondering if you were a student of the teacher there yourself, or, you know, if you're a Buddhist.
I feel like I'm only a Buddhist when I'm actually practicing Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
And much the same as, you know, one's a poet as much as one is writing it. And yes, I consider myself a practicing Buddhist, in that it's a kind of almost view of things that's permeated my whole outlook. But I feel I had that anyway. You know, I had a sort of sense of the maybe the illusory quality of one's existence, and a kind of interest in taking things apart, and actually, you know, feeling. I remember feeling at a very early age, I was just this, you know, bundle of tendencies, you know, a conglomeration of tendencies, that my being was not so solid. And I think I've, you know, tended to somewhat explore that in the poetry as well, and that, for example, in the makeup of it on Empty Space, actually putting everything into emptiness and then kind of taking it apart as the poem goes on. There's a kind of a dismantling quality, and actually thinking of poems as ritual enactments.
Do you feel that you and your poet friends have had to work hard at all to gain credibility from the poetry establishment?
Well, I think there's I don't know if one worked hard for that reason. I think we're just, you know, working hard, and there's, you know, quite a bit of sympathy. And wherever I travel, I feel like I have many poet friends who are, you know, considered more in the academic world. I think there's a new generation, certainly my generation, which is now out there, you know, teaching and traveling around and being acknowledged through their publishing and their work. And I think there is credibility. I've certainly had no difficulty with that.
Anne Waldman's recent books include Blue Mosque, published by United Artists, and Skin, Meat, Bones, published by Coffee House Press.